Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to Roguecast, episode 229. And, I don't know anything. We're trying to cast number
229, the podcast that is packed with all the things.
Mm-hmm.
We got lots of news. We got reviews of a pretty big week, and we have topics that we'd like to get to if we can.
We're going to try to. So
there's just so much entertainment and joy in the world that we are going to try and encompass it with this podcast and tell you how best to enjoy it yourself.
In the name of that, we're going to skip over store news. Just real quick, all you need to know is Halloween Comic Fest. We talk about it every week.
Yep.
Let's jump on to TV news first.
Yep.
So these two stories I feel like are sort of back-to-back with one another. Amazon has ordered a Wheel of Time TV series, and Netflix is doing a Chronicles of Narnia series. Amazon also already has the
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings series.
Yep.
Everybody's trying to get the Game of Thrones business.
Yep. If they can get anywhere close to Chronicles of Shannara, then they'll be...
Oof, Dave, why would you?
Winning.
That was MTV's
hashtag winning.
Thing, right?
That was MTV's
still going,
thing.
I think.
I think he's right.
But anyway, now they're obviously at least shooting for sort of a more prestigious thing. I tried Wheel of Time once, and I could not get into it. It felt more Chronicles of Shannara-y.
I've never tried it.
I think it was meant to be, you know, like Tolkien, but with stronger female characters, like just about everything that's not Tolkien. and a big tapestry.
Wait, who's doing Name of the Wind? Is Amazon doing that one too?
Oh.
The Path of Grotha stories? One of them is doing that, too.
Yeah.
I thought Amazon.
And that's another one.
This is a little bit like, right, I mean, there was a number of sort of fantasy releases in theaters, like just post-Lord of the Rings, and they kind of didn't take. I think the overall taste for fantasy amongst the general audiences is not super high. Every once in a while, you can have a big breakout, but it's going to be rare.
But I guess, like, if you're going to roll the dice, all of these have definitely a fan base, so
yeah.
These are ones that I would expect.
Yeah, Wheel of Time was a big one. I definitely know
Wind,
fans. And
Narnia,
like, just think of all the time we can spend with Mr. Tumnus drinking tea.
It's true. If you're going to roll the dice, why not do a damn Dungeons & Dragons series? Why does no one know what to do with this license?
It's crazy because you know what it would allow them to do that none of the other ones can quite pull off? It'd be a little snarky.
A little fun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would have characters talking a little bit in a slightly modern vernacular in it.
John Rogers, who wrote that Dungeons & Dragons run that we loved, is a TV producer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like this may come down to Wizards of the Coast and them not really knowing what to do. They can't make a toy line. They can't make a...
So many different ways they could be raking in the bucks.
It is crazy.
It'd be like, you know how like Marvel doesn't make that much off of their comics? It's all the merchandising and movies stuff now. It'd be like if they were like, no, we just want to stick with the comics.
Yeah.
We don't want to get into those other things. Oh, you know, there hasn't been a good superhero movie, you know, like, and that's what it felt like in, like, the 80s and 90s.
Did the heads of Wizards just get burned after the horrible D&D movie, and they're like, we can't do it again?
I think so. Yeah. They also did a Dragonlance cartoon that sucked. So they've dropped the ball on a lot of stuff. And that had Kiefer Sutherland as Raistlin, which was a good casting
call.
Then
there was the D&D cartoon. I mean, that's the best
that they ever had was in, like, 1981 or something. That's as good as it gets.
Maybe somebody new has to come onto the board and kind of maybe take a chance.
For sure, like, it needs to be good. That's the thing. Like, and I think a TV series
John
would
Rogers
be good.
Could do it. John Rogers would be the guy.
Yeah.
Or to adapt the kind of stuff they're doing for IDW right now. Or do a Dragonlance live action.
What's John Rogers doing right now? I'm sure he's doing something.
I don't know, the player, right? That's the last thing I remember.
Oh, that's
5
right.
years ago or something.
That was.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I think, I honestly think because there's so much D&D buzz in the air, if they were to do it and go with, like, an original characters, you know, that are kind of, like, feel like a D&D party in that John Waters sense.
Yeah.
John Rogers.
John Waters D&D would also be interesting.
It would be interesting.
But I think maybe if they set it in the Forgotten Realms so they could have guest stars from, like, Drizzt and Minsk and Boo.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, who's the big wizard guy?
Elminster
and stuff like that. That would be it, and then they'd still kind of pull in some classic fandom along with getting all the newbies who are getting into D&D who kind of like a little bit more tongue in cheek.
Xanathar or nothing.
I mean,
that's the thing. They could do Beholders, and they could do Displacer Beasts, and they could do Mind Flayers,
Owlbears, Gelatinous Cubes,
stuff that only D&D has.
Yeah, and have a ball doing it.
Yeah. It's crazy. Anyway, that's the show I want to see. I really don't give a shit about Wheel of Time or Chronicles of Narnia.
I'll try out the Narnia one.
I will too. I have some fondness for
I'll try both of them because I'm a TV fan.
Yeah.
But I'm not as much of a fantasy guy in general.
I feel like they'd almost have to, like, based on what I've read of Wheel of Time, it's going to need to get a slight TV overhaul.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to do that. Yeah. And so they might actually repurpose it into something that interests me.
By the way, given that Paizo is better at this than Wizards, how crazy would it be if there was like a Pathfinder TV series before D&D series?
That would be that'd be a bit of a coup for them, you know. Yeah. For a while they were, they were kind of stomping on D&D, and then D&D made a big old comeback.
Yeah,
that'd be one way that they could kind of get back in the saddle.
I mean, they've got their iconic characters; you could totally make it work.
Yeah. I agree.
But I don't know. Maybe nobody on TV is interested in it.
I would be fascinated, if nothing else, to see if there's any chance for multiple major fantasy projects to take hold. My surmise is there is not.
Yeah. The big news that I think Dave was a little lukewarm on and Nick and I are both excited about is The Mandalorian, which is revealed as to be the show that not James Gunn,
John Favreau
is working on for the Disney streaming.
It's his Star Wars live action show,
yeah,
right?
So he's
it's
basically
not animated.
Show running it. Yeah, it's live action.
Yeah, he put out a crawl for it, which I'm trying to find. That was sort of like what the basic is, but it sounds like basically a man with no name in Star Wars between Force Awakens.
Kind of what we were talking about when we were talking about a Boba Fett movie. They're basically
found it. After the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire, before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travails of a lone gunfighter in the outer reach of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic. It's a
kind of generic description, but
bad and the ugly set in space.
I mean, maybe they said a did they
fistful
call
of dollars.
Did they call him an outlaw?
Outlaw,
just a gunman. Okay,
it's fistful of dollars more than good, bad, the ugly. But I'm interested in this because I like Jon Favreau. This is kind of what I want from Star Wars. I liked Han Solo better than anything else. I like sort of on the fringes of the Star Wars universe, less Republic, less Jedi.
I mean, I was down with the concept regardless, but once they announced who the directors were, yeah. I'm like, yeah, screw it. Those are amazing.
So the directors include Deborah Chow from Jessica Jones, Rick Fumiyawa from Dope, who we really like, Bryce Dallas Howard, Taika Waititi.
Bryce Dallas Howard been directing?
No,
this will be her first.
She's directing something called Soulmates.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know that.
Dave Filoni is directing the first episode. That's the guy who does all the Star Wars animation stuff. Mm-hmm. And, this is...
Did you also saw the photo that accompanied, or that came out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just the Mandalorian armor.
Yeah, it's nice looking. That made me more interested than, like, the premise, because I was like, that looks pretty good. But the thing I kind of can't wrap my head around, do we know this is going to be a half hour or hour long show?
I would imagine hour.
I assume hour long, yeah.
Is, like, I'm not sure what story they are going to spin that will interest me. Because so far, like, I mostly like the movies. The TV stuff I've liked, but it feels slight, and it's hard for me to kind of imagine getting pulled into those characters again in, you know, yet another sort of... I always think of Star Wars as kind of recycling the tropes, whether it's, like, a heist trope, outlaw trope, sure. War movie trope, stuff like that. And just they kind of put it through the Star Wars filter. So for me, I'm just like, I'm a little bit done with kind of seeing, you know, the Star Wars version of everything. And I can't see how it'll hook me, like, how I'll get pulled into the characters. But they might. I'm not going to rule it out. I feel like that the talent involved is crazy.
Yeah, the talent is great. I'm looking forward to this.
I think they're
going to
throw everything that they can at this, like, in terms of money.
Oh, yeah. It's going to look great.
It's going to look great.
In some ways, if it comes off, it's their chance to kind of redeem themselves after Solo tanked.
Yeah.
Or tanked in quotes, but, like, it underperformed.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting also to see a Star Wars, like, hour show with presumably a pretty big budget and how they'll handle that, because Star Wars is a lot of special effects all the time.
That's why you do the Western kind of thing, because they don't have to do a lot of spaceships.
Right.
They don't have to do a lot of aliens. They can...
They could do the aliens. They could do, like, the boss, I think
they'll put a fair amount of money into it.
I think they will, too.
But, if they... Having it a little bit in more wastelandy type places means that they can have sparer sets.
You don't have to do. You can do Jakku. You don't have to do like the Death Star and the big star
Corsica.
Battles and all that kind of. Yeah, Coruscant, that kind of thing. Yeah,
and I'm sure they'll be CG-ing in enough buildings and aliens and stuff in the background to occasionally give it flavor.
But I could be completely wrong. They might just go completely hog crazy or hog wild.
I don't think so. I suspect they will.
It's gonna be like the prequels where there's just always some CG creature walking around.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking like Game of Thrones kind of pretty.
It's possible, but I bet they're gonna keep this a little. I mean, it won't be low budget, but I think they're probably not going big grand scope on purpose.
Oh man, I think they will go Game of Thrones level for their first streaming thing out of the gate.
But the concept isn't Game of Thrones level. The concept is very
small
that we know of.
Yeah.
I mean,
right, but this you could still be getting into space battles. They could be like, we need you to, you know, you said you got out of the business, but we need you to go and infiltrate a Star Destroyer.
I mean,
something
if this
like
is like, this is a straight up bounty hunter. He could be doing jobs that take him all over the place, being, you know, to, you know, Tatooine and Coruscant and all his other places. They could just go crazy with it.
I think his first mission should be to kill the Sarlacc that killed Boba Fett. We need you to go punch this Sarlacc.
No, they haven't, right? This could be Boba Fett. This could be him out of the Sarlacc pit.
Let me tell you, that would be kind of a big reveal, especially if they Man With No named him and like did not show his face. Like, well, I don't think they could hold out a whole season, but at the end of the first episode, if you found out.
Yeah, if you just did something Australian.
Yeah. G'day, mates.
Oh, God, it's Boba Fett.
No, but fans would freak the hell out. I mean, there's no way around that.
We got two.
I'm actually thinking that there may be something to that. Now it's that possible. You just kind of mention it casually, I think they'll keep it a secret. I think they'll do everything they can to hide it. In fact, probably drop some stuff about his backstory that sounds completely different. But you'll find out. I bet like it's an assumed identity or something like that, and that's how he's been undercover.
I could hear the people in like the boardrooms like, "Let's make Boba Fett badass." I mean, he's so beloved as a character.
Right, but
let's
it's
give
never
him
fully
his story.
Been done in the movies. So yeah.
Yeah.
What were we saying, Randy?
Okay, so we got images from two DC shows. Krypton reveals it's Lobo.
Yep.
And Ruby Rose, we get her in the costume for Batwoman.
Yep.
These both look good.
Yep. Nobody here is watching Krypton, right?
No.
No.
Why would I?
Did y'all try it?
Yes.
No.
Nick? Okay.
It's terrible.
I'm surprised you didn't at least try it, Nick. I watched about 20 minutes, and it was boring.
It's bad.
Like,
I watched the first hour.
I know a few people who have,
not
like...
Not bonkers like Gotham?
No, that was what I was hoping for.
Yeah, it's just bad.
I've heard a few people speak up on its behalf. And I will say this, Lobo looks good. He looks like the Rob Zombie Lobo that they did in DC's 52 miniseries way back when.
Yeah, Lobo looks good, but he
looks like a nice touch.
I was saying I wish he had shown up on Supergirl.
Yeah.
He would have been a great antagonist on Supergirl.
Yeah.
And perfectly fitting their themes.
Yeah.
So in a way it's just feels like a waste. Like a cool character in a show that I don't think any of us will ever care about.
Nope.
By contrast, the Batwoman thing has potential, and the costume looks great.
It does. It looks like they just pulled it out of the comic.
Yeah. Who's the designer of the modern comic version?
J.H. Williams.
Yeah, it was actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it looks like that come to life.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
As far as I can tell.
I have weirdly more excitement for the upcoming Elseworlds crossover for Arrow.
Where they're going to introduce her.
I think just the Elseworlds premise is a lot of fun.
More excitement for that than...
I don't know if there's a comparison.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just really excited to see that crossover. They're always fun.
Her first appearance will be the crossover?
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That Flash showed up at the crossover with Arrow
right now,
first,
there's no guarantee of making her a show.
Is there not? I thought there was a show.
No, she's just showing up at the crossover.
No, they've already said that.
Oh,
they're,
they?
Yeah, they're going to continue her on. This is where she gets launched out of.
Okay, I thought they were doing the Flash thing and testing the waters.
No, they're outright pulling a trigger on this one,
which
is cool.
Yep.
Jessica Biel is going to star in the adaptation of the podcast Limetown for Facebook.
I know. I saw this floating around last night, and I'm like, wait a minute, Facebook does real... I mean,
Facebook
shows?
Everybody's getting into it.
They do have their Facebook watch, but... This is bad because I liked Limetown. It's a good little horror podcast.
Well, Limetown was one of those podcasts that
we talked
everyone,
about this like several years ago.
Yeah, everyone listened to it a long time ago, and it kind of had that weird like ending that, you know, they could have.
It had a non-ending, and they never came back.
Yeah, and they were all like, "Oh, we're going to come back. We're going to come back."
Oh, did it not have a satisfying ending?
Oh no, their ending was not satisfying.
No, it was like a huge cliffhanger.
I thought everybody y'all ended pretty happy about it.
Oh no, I was really happy.
Yeah,
I was
fine.
But I thought there was more coming.
Yes,
interesting.
And they honestly said that there was more coming, and then there was like,
do you think it took off? And then they're like, now we're making the show.
Well, yeah, they definitely got approached by somebody. but Facebook?
That's weird.
It's a weird call. I was thinking it was going to be Amazon or Hulu.
This is like when Powers went to Sony.
Yeah.
And that worked out great for everybody.
Yes.
But there's also been some surprises, you know? I mean, there's
CBS All Access is the notable one.
Yeah.
Nobody thought they'd do a Star Trek series that day.
I don't think I will seek this one out. If it was on Amazon or Hulu or Prime or Netflix, I probably would have.
Well, I imagine they're going to do kind of like what, like, YouTube Red, is that what they did with, like, make the first episode or two free?
Yeah.
So, like they did with the, Cobra Kai. And I'll try it out from that. I never fell in love with the podcast like y'all did. So, in a way, this could be one of those chances, like, I might be like, I like the show more. But we'll see. How's Jessica Biel as an actress?
She's fine.
Yeah, she's solid.
I saw in the thing that she won, like, an award or something.
Yeah, she's fine.
Okay.
I can't remember what she won an award for.
Something recently, like some show she's on right now.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I kind of was under the impression that she was not such a great actress.
That's kind of the impression I remain under. Everybody can have one good performance in them, though, so you know, whatever.
We're gonna go with diminished enthusiasm for this, but I'll say this: I'll try an episode because it's a weird horror-y, suspense-y sort of thing. It interests me enough that if it's free, at least I'll give it a shot.
Plus, it's on Facebook, so you're gonna see ads for it 100,000 times.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I guess she's on the show, which I don't watch. It's called The Sinner. Which
I heard good things about it, though.
Yeah.
Final bit of TV news: Dresden Files has been optioned for development by Fox 21. Dresden Files had a famously bad adaptation on Sci-Fi, starring Paul Blackthorne as Dresden.
Which, he was great.
I like Paul Blackthorne. I don't know that I would have cast him as Dresden.
No, probably not.
He's a little too old for the role.
Yeah.
But Dresden is like a 20-book series. He's is beloved by a lot of people. So it should be a good TV series.
On my friend's page, I was throwing out some ideas, but no one was responding, so I stopped. I was like, Ian Somerhalder would be good.
I agree with both your casting.
And Josh Holloway would be fantastic.
I think both those guys would be good casting. Josh Holloway could probably pull it off, since he was so good and then just vanished.
Well, he did that show on Sci-Fi.
Well, he's done the show Colony on USA.
Or on USA, that's what I meant, on Sci-Fi.
And he did that brief show Intelligence on CBS.
Yeah.
Holloway may need a new agent.
He might.
Anyway, it's early in development, but I think this show deserves a better treatment, and I hope it gets it.
Yes, I do too.
Moving on to movie news, there's only a few, but there's kind of notable. We'll start with the least notable thing, which is that God Country by Donny Cates and Jeff Shaw has been optioned for film by Legendary. That's very early on. We don't know if that'll go anywhere, but I can see a good movie of that.
Yep. Stephen talks of him actually writing the screenplay for it.
Slightly more notable, Chris Evans tweeted out that he is hanging up his shield and that Avengers 4 will be his last appearance as Captain America.
Sad.
Which breaks my heart, because Cap is the heart of the Marvel Cinematic Universe for me. I know some people will point to Tony Stark, but
at the very least, I think everybody would agree it's like him and Stark, you know, like they're the heart of it.
Well, the thing is, like,
but now Peter will be the heart of it.
The thing is, like, Cap, nobody else can fill this role. We talked about this afterwards.
Peter's ash cloud.
Like who's gonna be like the center of the Marvel universe? Captain Marvel, Black Panther. Cap had a certain role as sort of the moral center of the Marvel universe.
It's true.
That I think is gonna be hard to replace.
I mean, T'Challa could be it.
Yeah, but it's different. He's the king of Wakanda. It's different than Cap. I'm really disappointed to hear this. I know he talked about this a long time.
What if he goes and gets into politics, embodying all of Cap's ideals, and destroys everything that is evil right now?
Then I will forgive that.
Well, yes. I think we'll probably get Sebastian Stan. And he'll be the new Cap.
I don't like Sebastian Stan as Cap. I don't like anyone else as Cap. I don't like Winter Soldier as Cap. I enjoyed the Falcon as Cap run, but I don't want to see... Anthony Mackie cannot play Cap. He does not have the range. Cap needs to have a certain.
Would you? Presence. Here's a quick question, though. Would you have said that Chris Evans has the range before he played the role?
No.
Yeah.
But
so there could be somebody, but I don't know if anybody who exists already.
Exactly. He embodied it perfectly at the time. Yeah. If they were recasting Steve Rogers, I'd be much more excited about this. But it sounds like they're going to put Steve Rogers out to pasture, and I think Steve Rogers needs to be in the MCU, and that worries me because I still. I mean, I have a lot of faith in the MCU. Like,
One thing that like. You know, comics can get things wrong, very wrong, in like these shared superhero universes because there's so many creators in the pot, and the characters go last decades, and there's just all these pitfalls. But one thing that they are pretty good at doing is or that they can be good at doing is shaking up things sometimes. And I think you can become complacent. Like, Cap being the persistent moral... yes, he is the moral center. So what happens when that moral center is gone? Well, you tell an interesting story about how things... They lose their axis a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's not that I don't believe that... I have a lot of faith in Marvel. I believe they can do it. But...
You liked the exact fort thing that they had going, right?
I'm nervous because they have not told us anything about Phase 4. And... I understand. Part of me loves that I don't know what's coming. Part of me loves that mystery. But part of me is like, do you guys not have a plan? Did everything fall apart? Like, especially when you have things like Guardians 3 falling apart. And, like, I'm like, did you guys build to Infinity War, but you didn't know where you were going after that, and now you don't know
I believe Phase has a plan.
I suspect they've probably been particularly mum about it because of the X-Men and the FF things were up in the air, and those will be anchor points for sure.
Sure.
I think if they did that and a few, like, champions, power pack, you know, some little oddball ones on the side, I think
that could build. I think Eternals are going to be the backbone of the Marvel Universe.
This is what
now.
I'm worried about. There are a dozen ways this could go well. Yes, Dave is saying. But there's so many more ways it could go wrong. Like, nobody has a 20-year empire of great movies without having some stinkers. They've managed to pull that off, which means I'm just waiting for the other shoe.
It is going to fall.
It is.
So this could be it. That's probably the end, Randy.
That's going to make me sad. So
will it retroactively make all the preceding stuff like crap for you?
No, I'll love it. But that's the thing. I want them to continue being great. And every nod toward it might not continue makes me nervous.
Yeah.
So like things like Guardians falling apart, things like Chris Evans is not going to be in it anymore. I'm like, man, guys, I need a little reassurance that you're going somewhere good here.
You need Cap's firm hand on your shoulder.
I do
and
need
buttocks.
Cap's firm hand. What?
Just taken to the logical end.
I don't know. I'm giving the benefit of the doubt. I can't like wait in this
Nick,
kind of eternal struggle of like, is that shoe going to drop? And when it does, I'll be on there saying it's over. And
yeah.
It's like, I don't need that.
I don't. And this thing is, there's the people.
But Randy's a warrior.
I know.
There's the people who have spent the last 20 years saying, oh well, Guardians is going to be their first misstep. Oh, Ant-Man's going to be their first misstep. And they always want to point to it. They always.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy. I do not want to see them fall, but I am the guy who worries about it.
I don't know. As long as Phage stays around and sort of... So I think he's got a plan.
Nick, do you broadly... are you down for some shake-ups?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think Cap has to be there.
Yeah.
They're going to lose Cap and Tony, though. You know there's no way Robert Downey Jr. is continuing either.
Here's the thing, though. I think Chris Evans is not going to die. I don't think Cap is dead. I think he'll hang up his shield and leave it that he can come back to it after he's.
Cap wouldn't do that. That's crazy.
Well, first of all, we are seeing that when actors actually age, we're going to see some things in the movies that we have never seen in the comics because they are going to the actors will age out of the roles.
And I was looking forward to seeing Cap become the elder statesman of the Avengers and that kind of thing. And instead, it sounds like he's going to step away.
Yeah.
I don't want it. I wanted to see the journey.
Out of curiosity, has he said, I'm leaving Marvel, or is there any chance like he will come back as like Sentinel?
He said he was hanging up his shield.
Yeah. Well,
so it's like he's out.
Yeah. That could be a very cleverly misleading thing of like, I'm hanging up the Captain America shield. I will return as Sentinel years later.
No, he said something about like, it's been an honor doing this for the last 8 years. Like, it very much sounds like he is stepping away to go direct and do other movies.
Oh, I think he probably is, but I bet there's a back door open.
And that's
there.
What I'm like, I can see him returning after he does a couple of his own stuff that he wants,
maybe.
And he's like, oh, you know, I really liked being Cap.
I think maybe
amazing.
Randy sends him enough fan letters.
I do send a new one every day.
Tony, unfortunately, I think is dead. I'm sorry.
You think?
Yeah.
Tony's the one. Tony.
He started it. He'll finish it.
Maybe. I don't know.
It's the synchronicity.
I am ready for the trailer. I want some stuff to speculate on for Avengers 4.
I actually saw this thing floating around. They're not going to release a trailer.
Yes, they will.
No, I bet they don't. Just do it. Don't even release a trailer.
That's crazy.
Don't even release the title of it. Just drop it.
They can't do that.
Why not?
That's not how business works.
They've already got... People will see this regardless. Avengers Infinity War made so much.
I don't think they'll do that, but I like the idea.
I hope
you're right.
I was like, dude, that's so ballsy. Don't even release a trailer.
They won't.
I mean, it'd be the ultimate change of like in the sort of internet culture, everything is spoiled thing.
Yeah,
if they could just release it.
I would be like, just do it, man. I don't even.
But
I
think they do
know.
Need to build some hype, and that's just how you do it.
They couldn't even keep quiet that Cap is hanging up his shield before anything has come out. You think they can't put a trailer? Come on. There's no way in this culture they don't put it out.
I'm just saying they can. Sure, they will. They might, but what if they don't?
If they were that worried about secrecy, they would have told Chris Evans not to tweet that.
No, but I think. I mean, I feel like people know that. I mean. It was out there that his contract was up.
They've been muddying the waters for years about whether or not he was going to stick with it or not. This was a confirmation that we didn't necessarily need.
I'm just saying, I'm putting my money that they might not release a trailer.
I am putting my money on that they absolutely will release a trailer, and I'm ready to see that trailer.
One of us is right, one of us is wrong.
Yes.
One of us is dead.
Wow.
Last bit of movie news is this is probably the really big one, I mean, even bigger than the Chris Evans thing, is James Gunn is in discussions to write and possibly direct Suicide Squad 2.
Pretty huge.
Which would be a different Suicide Squad, like basically not the same thing as Suicide Squad.
Oh, they said it's going to be like use a different kind of premise, or?
So it's basically reportedly taking a new approach to the property that isn't exactly a sequel.
It's a new take on Task Force X.
He's supposed to be writing. He might be directing.
Suicide Squad as kind of an outlaw team fits his sensibilities.
Yeah. Suicide Squad felt like DC trying to rip off what they did with Guardians.
Oh, for sure. Well, at the very least, the soundtrack was straight up out of that.
Warner Brothers is probably just going to give them a pile of money and said, like, just save us.
James Gunn's Suicide Squad is if you were to ask me what I wanted that would make me interested in DC, that's it. Like, that I will go see.
Yeah.
That I'm excited about. So, I think this is probably a huge get for them.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is that I assume they're not relaunching the DC universe though.
No.
So they are. This would be kind of when you do like a kind of a stealth reboot sort of thing. It's like, well, they're gonna say like, well, the original program was problematic out of the gate. Their first enemy was like one of their own. So we've retooled it, or somebody else is heading it up.
But you have to keep Amanda Waller on there.
Nah. I mean, they probably will, but they could bring in like any number of like DC's Sarge Steel or any of those kind of types.
Well, the thing is,
they could even have you know how they didn't know
Mr.
what
Bones.
To do with Steve Trevor or we know he's going to come back in some way, shape, or form.
Have him run the.
Yeah, if there's they've done him as a spy guy before, so I could see him kind of taking over the. Rick Flagg role, that would actually be kind of interesting to me.
Here's the thing I think is interesting, is that Suicide Squad was, in my mind, was a stinker. I hated it. Mm-hmm. I know you guys liked it. Okay.
Yeah.
But there's enough, you could keep the good parts and go on, and it doesn't matter what the first movie was. Like,
right.
You're going to keep Harley Quinn, you know that she's going to be in it.
And you keep Will Smith.
I don't know. I don't know that you do.
Well,
I mean,
if they can get him, they probably
the budget,
would. But I bet they might not be able to get him.
They don't have to.
They could survive without him. But I can also see them using him.
There's always been talks about doing a Deadshot solo film, so.
Yeah. Well, there are enough characters in the Suicide Squad, just like Guardians, just like any other character.
Yeah, you can recruit anybody.
Bring in what? Count Vertigo, Poison Ivy.
You bring in King Shark.
King Shark,
eats people.
Yep.
Nom nom.
I think he'd be popular.
There's a lot of stuff you could do without even having to worry about the previous movie.
Yeah, it's true.
So I could easily see Gunn doing basically his own thing. But that's exciting.
It's a major coup for Warner Brothers, and it's kind of an F you to Marvel.
Yeah, yeah, it's that. And to Disney.
Yes.
Comic news. Mark Waid is joining Humanoids as their director of creative development. This is kind of similar to what Gail Simone is doing over at Lion Forge.
For people who don't know, Humanoids is is it the American side of
European comics? Yeah.
Right.
What is his title?
He is the director of creative development.
So is this not like what he was doing for? Wasn't he doing it for Boom?
Boom.
Was it for Boom?
Boom?
Okay.
Well, he was editor in chief of Boom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. But this is more what Gale is doing for
Waid knows a ton of people.
Yeah.
And he's going to bring those people over to work at Humanoids.
So is this overseeing new projects?
Yeah. The official description is new projects, new heroes, hot creators, a bold new direction, ushering a new era in comics.
For Humanoids.
Yep.
So it's not just going to be like him overseeing like reprints of European stuff from Heavy Metal
and stuff. It is a new initiative called H1.
Hmm.
I mean, I'll give it a shot. I like Mark Waid.
They were supposed to be announcing something about it at New York Comic Con.
I need it to be at least as good as the 1990s Barkerverse, which Clive Barker's concepts came to life.
Oof, Dave.
It has to be at least that good.
So let's see. Did they... They didn't give us any info on it, actually.
I was going to say, I saw this, and I didn't see anything more.
Okay, there was something at sci-fi.com. Let me see if there's... Because they were supposed to announce it at New York Comic Con. And...
Maybe I
he
just...
He says... Oh, it is a shared superhero universe.
Okay.
No secret enemies, masks, capes, or cowls. Creators involved include Dennis Calero, Carlos B. McNeil, and Yannick Paquette. That's all artists.
Okay.
They're going to... It sounds like they're like... Like Lionforge, what they're aiming at is sort of a diversity superhero universe.
You know what I think it would be sort of a, not best case scenario, but a better case scenario would be if this was kind of emulating what JMS did early on with the Supreme Power at Marvel.
Yeah.
That was pretty strong work, I felt. I always kind of liked what he was doing there.
It's interesting. DC Comics, with the help of Brian Bendis, is launching a new imprint called Wonder Comics, which is featured in continuity storylines aimed primarily at a teen audience. Bendis is going to write Young Justice with art by Patrick Gleason. That's going to feature Bart Allen as Impulse, Connor Kent as Superboy, and Tim Drake as Robin. There's going to be Naomi, which is a new character co-written by Bendis and David Walker with art by Jamal Campbell. Wonder Twins by Mark Russell, who wrote Flintstones and Snagglepuss, drawn by Stephen Byrne from Justice League Power Rangers.
That's actually not a bad team.
Sam Humphries is going to work on another new Dial H for Hero with artist Joe Quinones.
They love that concept.
They do, and I can't get away from it fast enough.
It's never been good. They've made like six of them, and they're all bad.
I actually liked was it Peter Milligan who did one? And that one was solid.
There were a couple solid Vertigo-esque ones, but none of them.
Is there ever a main, like a singular character in the Dial H for Hero, or is it always some new dude gets it?
It's always some new dude.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is like...
But if this does like retool that and actually makes it something else...
They've retooled it at least three times.
Yeah, like if somebody had the, like a singular person who was a character I liked, you know, would dial a new power, every time or whatever. Yeah.
I could be for that.
I think that'd be interesting. Incidentally, it'd be interesting, like, to get a power that's, like, sort of a weird power, and you're like, well, if I need to get something done, and this isn't going to quite do it, should I dial again, or do I risk getting some, like, even weirder power, or that's something that's completely ineffective?
My finger turns green. How is that, glows green. How is that going to help me here?
It'd be interesting to get somebody who would, like, kind of be, like, a superhero, if it was set in the DC universe, an advisor, like an old guard guy who would be trying to train him no matter what the powers are. He could be, like, his sensei-type dude.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. I don't know. They've never done a concept.
Yeah, no, it's going to stink.
And I like the one... I did like the one that... It wasn't Milligan. It was... the guy who worked with Jill Thompson on a bunch of stuff. Will something. The guy
Pfeiffer?
Will Pfeiffer. That's right.
Will Pfeiffer's Dial H was actually pretty solid as a sort of Vertigo-esque superhero take, yep. But it still wasn't great. And I don't remember much of it.
Bendis overseeing essentially kind of a teen superhero line doesn't sound great to me.
Then again, Bendis did launch Ultimate Spider-Man and Miles Morales...
Yeah.
And Riri Williams, so
there's
something to be said for he might create the seeds of something that someone else will do better in 5 years.
Is it bad that I want Bendis as an editor instead of as a...
Bendis would be better at that role.
As a writer?
I mean, editors theoretically should know how to spell things and know how to capitalize sentences, but other than that, he'd be great for
it. I don't think I want him as an editor. I don't think I like his creative instincts.
But I mean, well, his creative instincts are fine.
His instincts are solid. His creation stuff
like,
is fine.
When I think about things like... What his instincts to do on Avengers?
Oh, that's true.
And his instincts on X-Men. Yeah. His instincts on House of M. Like all of those things.
But I will say those sold. Those sold really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about what I want.
Yeah.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, personal stakes.
But the thing is, like, I like the idea of Young Justice. Mm-hmm. I like Patrick Gleason. There's no way I'm going to read this book.
Well, I want to see how that kind of jives with the Rebirth universe, considering some of those characters don't exist.
Yeah. Did they say this, like, is in Connor. Continuity?
Yeah, they've said it's in continuity, and they're bringing Connor back.
Okay. They're nearing ish the end of Doomsday Clock, and here you have a godlike being who overtly tinkered with the pieces of the universe. It's if true. They want to do some tinkering, they're coming up
you
on
think
a chance.
Superman is going to kill Dr. Manhattan, take over his power, and rewrite reality.
I don't think Superman would kill anyone.
the buried lead here, I think, is Wonder Twins by Mark Russell.
Yeah,
Mark Russell, fun. Everything he's done. Snagglepuss recreated that character as like a Tennessee Williams playwright.
Yep. Yeah.
And Flintstones was like subversive as hell. Yeah. So I'm not sure of what that dude's going to do with Wonder Twins, which it pushes everybody's nostalgia buttons.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that possibility.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, other comic news. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 1 by Tom Taylor and Juan Cabal. This is in here, of course, because Tom Taylor is one of my favorite comic writers, and I'm
super excited. You wanted to make this an informal Tom Taylor Tuesday?
Informal Tom Taylor Tuesday. I am super excited that he's going to be writing a Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man book.
I have discovered that Tom Taylor is a guy who I really liked on Injustice, but I haven't necessarily liked on other projects. I liked his Power Rangers Justice League pretty well. But I do not have full Tom Taylor enthusiasm.
I love everything he's written. I love Adult and Wolverine. Mm-hmm. I love X-Men Red. Pretty much everything he's done.
I think his sensibilities will work really well in a Spider-Man book.
Yeah.
I feel like it could.
I don't think I've ever...
I was about to ask if he's done a solo hero, but, like, Wolverine would be pretty
I don't know if we've ever seen him write Spider-Man. Has he ever shown up in... Wolverine or anything.
Spider-Man does have his own unique speed. I could see him pulling it off.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Tom Taylor, we know he's good at action.
Yeah.
We know he's good at humor. We know he's good at character work. I think he's going to be great on this book.
Yes.
So, all right. Trailers. This is the last bit of news we have. It's been a big news week.
Yep.
There are two teaser trailers from Amazon. One is for Good Omens, one is for The Boys. Both seem to have decent casting, both have decent production values, both are boring as hell.
You're just talking trailer-wise.
Yeah.
I think The Boys one is fine. I could see what they were doing with it, basically kind of introducing the Seven, which is their Justice League.
But that's not who the characters of The Boys are. That's not what it's about.
The Boys show up at the very end and give the bird to the...
Yeah. Well, what I try and picture is my sister-in-law, who's a casual comics reader, but like loved Preacher and like both the comic, I think, and the show. Would this trailer have drawn her interest? And I think it probably would. Mm. It's kind of subversiveness. Because what it looks like is you're seeing she looks like an executive.
Yeah.
Describing...
Elizabeth Shue.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
And what is she talking about? Their kind of new superhero initiative planning or
she's
whatever?
Talking about how their superheroes are like a public service.
It's right.
Like this corporation that
It's almost like you're seeing like a PowerPoint where there's images of them up on the screen being heroic and there's a Superman
type
and a Wonder
Woman
type.
She's basically Jerry Maguire for the Seven.
Yes, I guess so. I haven't seen Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. She's their agent.
Yeah.
She's the super agent.
And then, there's this swelling heroic music. It makes it feel like you are meant to at first be thinking, yes, I'm on board this lady's project. And then at the end you see these kind of the roughnecks and hoodlums that make up the Boys, giving them all the finger.
Here's the thing. The Boys is a super violent, super degrading, funny. It's supposed to be darkly funny.
Right.
There's nothing funny about this trailer except for the very tale at the end, and it's not enough.
But it's like a teaser trailer.
Yeah, I just...
I don't think you can put too much on this one.
Think about Better Off Ted. Remember when Better Off Ted was every time they'd have the ads for the corporation,
yeah,
and there was a little bit of subversive humor in there?
Yeah.
That should have been in this trailer.
Well, yeah, because I don't like The Boys as a comic, I don't really... The notion of a trailer that would appeal to me is like, I don't really see it existing.
Oh, no, I'm just offended as a TV fan. I just don't make boring trailers, and this was a boring trailer.
Yeah.
And the same for Good Omens. I like both those actors in those roles. I like the sense of the chemistry between them, but they don't tell me anything. I've never read the book. They don't tell me anything about this.
I mean, it's basically just focusing on those two characters, and they're... While they are a part of the bigger story, they're kind of a small part in a lot of ways.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a bigger story about the Antichrist and sort of how they avert Armageddon.
Because it does not look like that's what it's about.
I know, but that is. You have to think, it's Terry Pratchett craziness.
The thing that drives me a little bit crazy about Amazon is they've got so much money. They're putting so many shows together, and so many of them are so bad. And they should all be better. Like, occasionally they'll hit with a Mike Marvel's Mrs. Maisel. But yeah. Whenever I hear that Amazon has something instead of saying Netflix or Hulu, I get disappointed because they have let me down so many times. Like, Man in the High Castle is boring. I'm sorry, I know some people enjoy it, but it's boring.
I will give both of these a shot, mainly because I like all the people involved. I love Carl Urban and The Boys, so...
I will give them a shot because watching TV is part of my job, is part of my podcast.
And I know they announced that what's his name is actually going to play Wii U. He's father.
Oh yeah, Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, yeah, which I thought was hilarious.
That's funny. Yeah. For those who don't know, Simon Pegg was the clear visual model for the character in the comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was Simon Pegg as he was when he was like 25.
Yeah. Anyway. Moving on to other trailers, there was an extended trailer for Aquaman, which I did not watch.
Yep. It was a 5-minute trailer, which I know people were like, oh my god, 5 minutes, you're showing everything.
And I'm like, as soon as I realized that there was like a scene where, I mean, I know it was an edited down version of it, but it was like a full scene.
Yeah, it was
of them like exploring some ruins.
It's not unlike what they did for Captain America Winter Soldier, where they released the entirety of the elevator sequence before the movie had come out.
I forgot that.
I wish they hadn't done that.
Yeah, I mean, but I feel like James Wan wants to get people in the seats, and I honestly think this will do that.
DC always has, you know, or these days especially, they have a harder time probably, like, convincing people of their property, and, you know, Aquaman is its own special trial.
Yeah, because a lot of people are like, oh, he talks to fish, and that's all they remember.
Right.
So I honestly,
they've already done a pretty good job countering that by having like hunkiest actor alive playing him, and having a kind of giving him that sort of snarky, slightly bro-ish sense of humor.
Yeah.
To kind of counterbalance the super straight edge Aquaman is just a doofus.
Yeah. The visuals of this look great, though. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I like the scene. That's the thing, is that there's that scene, and at least one other scene that they showed that were somewhat extended.
Yeah.
And then some clips we've seen, but longer versions of them.
And I
thought it all looked pretty good.
We got to see, like, all the cast members in their sort of roles, like Patrick Wilson as Orm, and Willem Dafoe as Vulko.
And who's Black Manta? I mean, I don't know who the actor is, but you get to see a little bit more of him.
Yep. And get to see his.
He looks super cool.
His costume. And you also get to see some of his. Up, but it looks as close to the comics as you could probably get.
Yeah. And I think, did we see also some of his agents?
Yep.
Like his hoods and stuff?
Yeah, the henchmen that he kind of rents out.
Yep. there's. The thing that I'm, like, least sure of in this is unfortunately kind of a big thing, which is, like, will Momoa be able to carry that movie himself? And is the chemistry going to work between him and Mira? Because I feel it kind of falls a little flat in the trailer.
He's a little over the top and she's a little subdued in a lot of ways.
Right.
But I feel like that could work in the long run.
Right. Yeah, like I can see it working on the screen. I just am not quite sold based on what I've seen. And that said, I am overall sold. I'm going to see the movie.
Yeah. There's a ton happening in this movie, it seems like, because they've got the Trench, they've got Vulko, they've got...
Right, the Trench is like those, like, Lovecraftian monsters.
Yep.
And then we know there's going to be, like, big clashes of armies kind of stuff. I wonder how much sort of surface stuff Aquaman will be doing. Like, what's the main plot that takes place on land?
Maybe there won't be one.
We see Nicole Kidman kicking some ass. Which
oh yeah,
that was
something I had not seen before. So that was, she was playing his
mom,
mother.
Yep,
actually his mom or
yeah, it's Arthur's mom.
Yeah, yeah,
yep.
Yeah, that was kind of cool looking. Everything looked gorgeous. I actually liked the kind of quieter scenes or more reined in ones, like where they were exploring the ruins and stuff.
We can't not mention the costume.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
I mean, it is super faithful to
the comics.
He
had the classic golden green or orange.
Good.
Green.
It looks very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe that was the general consensus they did it. It kind of, you know, it's still, it's movied up slightly in the sense that, like, the armor, you know, the gold part looks a little bit probably more armory, not chainmail quite, but something sort of like that.
But it's on the level of costume designing that we saw with, like, I mean, not to say, like, the Titans, but you know how the Hawk and Dove costumes look so spot on to what those characters...
Sure.
It sort of translates in that same way.
I'm pretty hyped for it. I'm going to keep my expectations moderate, but I'm ready to enjoy that flick.
Yeah.
When is it coming out?
Soon.
It's this year, right?
Yeah, I believe it's, like, later this year, like, November?
Okay.
All right, last thing. The Star Trek Discovery Season 2, the new trailer for that came out. This is a great trailer.
Yeah.
That was really good. I, you know, it immediately kind of has kind of a old school Trek vibe because you see Pike, then captain of the Enterprise, taking over command of the Discovery to investigate the weird red phenomena that are all scattered throughout the galaxy. and giving the sense that this is going to be almost kind of like a quest season, you know, where they're like tracking down, like, there's 7 different instances of this. I don't know if they're going to like all have different things going on. I don't know how they're going to pace it out.
It's
but
like the plot of an old G.I. Joe cartoon.
Yeah, yeah, they have to get the pieces of the mass device. There's they explicitly mention Spock being kind of having gone off rogue, chasing after it. I don't know if he's rogue, but it seemed that way.
Yeah, it does.
And that he's had like visions about it, which was a little mystic-y for my taste.
And
a
then
little
Burnham
bit
has some sort of visionish it as well.
Well, it sounds like the two of them had the same vision because they both were Vulcans of the same family.
Yeah, it looked like sort of an angelic type creature in one of the things.
That's not super weird for Star Trek.
Here's the thing. Vulcans have actually always had the mysticism thing going on, so it does somewhat make sense. But it's slightly weird to have Spock talking about mystic visions. He's logic guy.
There's also a lot of godlike aliens in Star Trek.
Yep.
So
somebody gotta put them in their place.
It's funny, Davis, the thing that you liked about this, which I also liked, but you liked the old school stuff and like seeing the traditional Klingons and the ship and that kind of thing.
Right.
And that was good for me.
Uh-huh.
But for me, what did it was seeing all the characters I love again. Seeing
Tilly and Saru.
Tilly and Saru and especially Georgiou.
Yeah.
Georgiou being part of like Section 31.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That is I would watch a spin-off of that in a heartbeat.
Michelle Yao commands such a presence.
I love,
and she just looks like she's having such a fun time.
I think so.
I love Mirror Universe Georgiou in the Star Trek universe. She's such a disruptor. I mean, it's
perfect. It's a bizarre concept for me to wrap my head around.
Right, for those who don't know, their Section 31 is sort of like their kind of Black Ops CIA-ish thing of Starfleet. And it looks, I don't know how much time is meant to have passed, because they basically, in the previous season, they kind of resolved things after the Mirror Universe within a few weeks at the very most. Yeah. And
but I'd imagine it would pick
and then
up
they,
right where
they
left
were already.
Off.
And then within that time, they met with the Enterprise. So it could be just a few weeks later.
Could be.
But, you know, I almost got that vibe that in the handful of weeks that Michelle's like running, Michelle Yeoh's running that place.
Yeah.
Section 31.
I don't think it would take her long to basically
to overtake
everything.
Yeah. To jump back to what you were talking about, the old school stuff, this is actually, I was very excited about it. It's sort of minor in the scheme of what was scheme of things, because it was only really more of just a visual style problem. In season one, they did a complete overhaul on the Klingons. They changed how they look, and it unfortunately wasn't for the better, I think. It was like Klingons had a look that people really liked in the original series, and a look that they really liked for Next Generation. And they came up with a third look, and I don't think it stood up to either of them. But because they redesigned all of the Klingon ships. Klingons have one of the coolest looking attack ships.
Yeah,
their bird of prey is.
It's their the D7, which there's a version of it that gets the cloaking device later when they team up with the Romulans.
Yep,
but they were not using those on Disco Season 1. Right. They were using all these weird organic, not organic-y looking, but they like
they're
clearly
Kirk ships, yeah.
Yeah, and they looked cool if they were some other alien race, but they did not even look remotely Klingon. And I think because they had like the rival houses duking it out, I was always kind of holding out some hope, not really a whole ton of it, that they were going to say, well, like some house will ascend and their high-tech stuff will become the new state of the art and it'll be the classic look of some of those things. Well, I don't know exactly if that's happening.
Seems to be.
But it seems to be. There's definitely a classic Klingon ship glimpsed in there. And what's more, Klingons glimpsed with hair, their long, tawny manes of hair, which is, you know, the next generation look, and it's a good one. No idea if we're supposed to learn that, because at least one of the characters was Laurel from season one, and she could have had genetic modifications. We could have found out that she was bald only because it was a cultural thing, and now they're not doing it that way anymore.
We also see glimpses of what, Rebecca Ramone?
Rebecca Ramone as, number one, the second in command of the Enterprise.
Is that the Michelle Barrett Roddenberry?
Yeah, she, from the original Star Trek premiere. She was supposed to be kind of in her way a sort of super logical.
She wasn't Nurse Chapel?
No.
Okay.
She was number one, who didn't have a name actually, but sometimes has been called Una in the books and stuff.
Okay.
Not a super cool name.
Right.
Exactly how they'll play her, I don't know in this, but she was clearly meant to be somewhat logical on the order of Spock.
Okay.
But as a human. Anyway, it'll be. I'm interested to see her interpretation of it. What else do we see? There's things
actually
flying around.
Spock?
There's We do see Spock looking super sexy with a beard.
Lumberjack Spock,
yep.
As he's been coined.
Yes.
I love seeing all the original outfits from like yes. the classic Trek stuff.
Yeah, I'm sort of hoping it takes over and that the Discovery switches over to him.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
I like the Discovery uniforms.
Yeah, the Discovery uniforms are sort of, I feel, should stay with
the
Discovery.
They look good, but to me they spoke of that sort of more regimented military look. And I kind of like them to get into the somewhat brighter color schemes of Next Generation, which is of the original series, which is the era that they're butting up against.
You feel
against.
Like those outfits are sort of a corruption of what's his name?
Lorca.
Yeah.
And sort of what he wanted.
Do we know if, like, I guess Enterprise is the first other Federation ship we've really
yeah,
seen
we
in it.
Seen
so like we don't know what they're
no,
wearing.
We saw Georgiou's ship.
Did they also have...
Shenzhou, they also had those uniforms.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's... I mean, you know, when they switched to the maroon uniforms in Star Trek 2, which I really like, but in
yeah.
retrospect, I do find kind of a little overly militaristic,
yeah.
and I miss the kind of brighter colors of, say, Next Generation or the original series.
Yeah.
I hope they make the switch. If they don't, I'm not going to be disappointed, because I like
yeah.
the look of the current ones, too, but...
I'm the other way around. I don't mind if they make the switch, but I like the Discovery uniforms. I like the red uniforms in Trek 2. I like the consistency.
You're gonna get shut down, Randy. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems clear that basically did we see Discovery people wearing them or only Pike and his crew?
Only Pike and his crew.
Yeah.
Here's what I think might be the case, in order to sort of bridge where they want to go. I'm wondering if they're gonna be like the Enterprise was an experimental 5-year mission vessel.
Yeah.
They got specialty uniforms.
Yeah, I could
and
see
then,
something
well,
like that.
That became the and so like Discovery will be the outlier, but Discovery wasn't the outlier originally. That makes sense continuity wise.
What were
and
some
if that
of the
is
other...
the case, that argues for your they would change over those uniforms.
Like in the first season of Discovery, we saw a couple of other like captains of other ships where they were.
Yeah, they were just wearing
the
blue.
Navy.
They
yeah.
were just the okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just
yeah.
trying to remember. I could...
You know the one thing that's notable we'd not see is Lorca in any way. I wonder if he's gone or if he's going to return.
I do think it'd be, like, I would not show him if I were going to use him.
I wouldn't either.
He'll be in third season.
You think?
Yeah, he'll be back.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I don't know, I'm super excited about this. And I watched the short Trek and I like that. You don't
I still need to
yet.
See that one.
All right. That's the news for this week after about an hour.
Yep.
Be back in just a minute to talk about comics for the week. One familiar cry. We're talking comics the week of Wednesday, October 10th. This is a somewhat solid week. I think we're going to try and burn through it so we can talk to Doctor Who a little bit before we go. Dave, why don't you start us off since you got another graphic novel pick because you're a big cheater.
Yep. I dared to read a big boy comic.
He's not cheating. These are like original graphic novels.
True. He's still cheating.
Yeah. I like to read mature subject matter and not your little kiddie pamphlets.
Fair.
Man, remember when that was a thing? When like all the snarkiest dudes in the industry would be called single issues, like Warren Ellis did this, pamphlets.
People still call them pamphlets, and I hate whenever I see it. I know not to take that person's opinion seriously.
Yep, it's always such a derisive term.
Yep.
What is this book you hold in your hand?
This book I hold in my hand is Ed Brubaker's original graphic novel, My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies. A provocative title for a
yes.
provocative book. He's working with Sean Phillips, who's his man Friday on every single thing
he's
he does nowadays.
Current.
But yeah, you'll have seen him on Criminal and Killer Be Killed and everything else. Fatal.
It's been like 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a completely rooted in reality kind of story that does have to do with substance abuse, as the name would suggest, and takes place at like a rehab clinic. Also, for those who don't know, Ed Brubaker's earliest comics were autobiographical comics. Before he was writing Captain America and creating Winter Soldier, he was writing about his own time, his misspent youth as a junkie
yep.
and petty thief.
Yep.
All sorts of other stuff. I've read some of those stories, and it is interesting. The first book, it was called A Complete Low Life.
Yeah.
So he clearly, I think, was working with some serious self-esteem problems and did some bad stuff as a kid. In this, we have a heroine in it, and heroine the drug as well.
Heroine as well.
But a girl whose name I'm suddenly not going to remember, Ellie, she's in a rehab clinic, and the story is told from her perspective throughout.
She's not a teenager, but she's young.
Yeah, she feels like she's in her 20s. And I'm not going to go into too much detail about this other than to say it's really good, and it comes from a place of knowledge from somebody who's clearly lived in this world. Yeah. But she is torn between almost the romance, the kind of tragic romance of the addict,
the
especially
addicts,
yeah, especially because as we learn early on, one of the few connections that she has to, like, her parents, who were also addicts, and, like, they were, like, what, professional thieves, right?
Yeah,
Randy?
Yeah.
Is she, when they were, like, when her dad died, he was cleaning out her stuff, I think, or no, the mom, and she found, like, a mixtape the dad had made for her back in, like, the 70s or 80s or whatever it would have been, and it's like she like super bonded with that track. Music is a big thing running through this. Her interest in music, and she realizes that all of these she like listened to that tape until it fell apart, and she realizes that all the songs in it were written by people who were like basically junkies, all some stripe of addict, and like so she has this strong sense that the sort of the best artistic creations come from people who were into drugs. She's aware of the pitfalls, but kind of doesn't buy into it. But she's also a little bit dead inside. And what happens is she ends up. We kind of get to know through her kind of jaundiced eye some of the other addicts in the place that where she's locked up, including a guy she's kind of got a thing for immediately. And she is, what would you say, Randy? A bad influence on him.
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna say. It's interesting to have a protagonist who is... It's not that she's a bad person, or like an unlikable person, but she may be a bad person.
You know what? That's every Brubaker protagonist.
I guess that's true.
This is Brubaker and Phillips doing what they always do in just a different setting. I felt like this was... If you like their previous stuff, you're going to like this stuff.
Yeah. It's... So even if you've got somebody who's a straight-edged dude like me... this is not some super nasty gross comic that's going to turn you into a creepy nasty gross person.
Yep.
It's a story about people, and it's got insight. It is not going to preach to you, but nor is it going to try and like hide the bad side effects. I guess what I'm going to say is it's not Requiem for a Dream.
Right. Yeah.
It tells a very different kind of more personal, more specific story about a group of people. In rehab, but it also uses heavy flashbacks to her life and her parents' life in it, and interesting speculation about the nature of addiction from Brubaker, a guy who's lived it. So this is a complete graphic novel. There's not a miniseries or anything.
Nope.
It just came out all on its own, and it's actually a really good price for a hardcover. It's $16.99. And we even got, we have, like, a bonus book plate that comes when you get it.
Signed by Brubaker.
So, this is the kind of thing you should for sure pick up if you are any Stryber Brubaker fan or drug addict.
Yep. Nick?
I'm going to talk briefly about Spider-Geddon number one.
Is there any addiction in that? That's what I'm
There's
into
an addiction
now.
Actually, yes.
Yeah, really? Actually, there kind of is.
Otto Octavius's addiction to being right at all costs.
Yes. A lot of big things start kind of falling into place. We've had a lot of setup with the Edge of Spider-Geddon and the one-shot Spear Octopus, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is starting up the main series. We sort of see our main player, which I'm happy to have announced, that it's sort of Miles Morales, is kind of like the central character, which I love seeing instead of Peter.
Yeah.
But all the other spiders are also involved. Spider-Man Noir, Ghost Spider, Spider-Punk, Spider-Ham. And we get to see how Otto Octavius falls into this mess and what he does that may cause everything to go to hell.
I love that his arrogance, despite him trying to turn New Leaf as a hero, his arrogance still basically dooms them all.
Yes. I love that Christos Gage is using a character that I have some fondness for. Like he did in his Superior Octopus run, he gets to do it here.
Is that a supervillain?
Yeah, old Avengers villain.
Yep.
But there's just really some cool setup. The art here by, was it Jorge Molina? Was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, is fantastic. It falls in lines with sort of the Spider-Verse stuff that's come before it.
This is the sequel to Spider-Verse.
Yeah, it is.
And it's really, really good. People who like Spider-Verse will definitely want to check this
out. And also, I mean, the villain here is their threat.
Yeah.
I mean...
Their villains are scary.
Their villains are very scary.
Let me just ask, does Spider-Ham die? because I hope
no,
it does.
Not yet. No, but there are deaths.
There are deaths.
It's not something that's taken willy-nilly. It's not a...
okay.
Everything is fine.
Well, I know the threat... What do they call them? The Inheritors?
The Inheritors.
Are pretty heavy-duty dudes.
Yeah,
so,
Moreland, Jamis is Moreland is the first member of them.
Yeah. And I liked what Slott did with that and made that a whole group of individuals.
Yep.
So yeah, Krista Skitch continues if you're playing the Spider-Man game and you're addicted to all things Spider, I think you need to get Spider-Geddon number one.
I've talked off and on about Immortal Hulk. This is Immortal Hulk number 7, which is basically this is their new sort of evil Immortal Hulk versus the Avengers. And this reminds me of an 80s comic I love where the Hulk, his consciousness had sort of disappeared, and it was just like pure rage and power.
Yeah, he was Scary Hulk.
And the entire Avengers team, including like the heavy hitters like Wonder Man and Thor and all those guys.
Hercules, all went toe-to-toe with him.
Went toe-to-toe with the Hulk, and it was a big fight where the Hulk was shown to be this giant threat, kind of the same way they do in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where the Hulk is so dangerous, no one else is on his level.
Yep.
Right.
This is that. It's in a town where basically people are being evacuated because the Avengers have come in to take on the Hulk, and Tony's brought Hulkbuster armor. Black Panther goes up against him. They wind up having to throw She-Hulk at him. And it is a great sort of superhero throwdown that really positions this Hulk as a much more dangerous foe. I really like it. I don't want to spoil too much about it, but I will say that just seeing... I'm not a big fan of Jason Aaron's Avengers. I think it's a weird team, but he uses this... The team that he throws at him here is pretty classic. Like I say, Black Panther, She-Hulk, Iron Man in the Hulkbuster armor, Thor, they all take their turns at him. And I like the resolution. I'm curious to see where it goes from here. This take on Hulk has been really, really good by Al Ewing and Joe Bennett, and I continue to enjoy every issue. Also, Domino number 7 this week is my backup pick. This is starting a new story arc. If you've not been reading Domino is one of my favorite books. Gail Simone's writing it. David Baldeon's doing the art. She and her compatriots, the mutant outlaw and the jewel thief Diamondback, have outfitted a new casino boat as their new base of operations. And so they're basically taking mercenary jobs from there. They wind up getting hired by this 16-year-old girl from Wakanda, who sends them off to Norway, where they have cool snow costumes and fight a supernatural threat.
I always like seeing the snow costumes.
It's super fun. It's got some great character stuff. It's got some great action. And it brings in a famous vampire from the Marvel Universe who we'll be seeing more of in the next few issues. Domino is a great book, and I think a lot of people should be reading it. A lot of people are, actually, because it's doing really well for us. Dave, what's your backup?
My backup is the 5th issue of Hawkman. I've been picking each one of these, maybe, or you might have picked one or two.
I think I might have stolen one.
Yeah, Hawkman, what makes this issue notable, and he's still on that mystery to kind of like discover, basically I think before this first arc is out, kind of the true nature of I forget what the name of the threat is, what they're called.
Some godlike beings.
The Deathbringers.
Deathbringers, yeah.
And how that links to all of his past lives that across time and space, you know, there's a Kryptonian him and all of that stuff. But the reason you're going to read this is because Hawkman teams up with the Atom.
And it's great.
It's super awesome. I don't know quite if they were... Did they share a book back in the
60s? Yeah, they had a team up in some
or
way.
Or were they just were they just made out to be buddies? Because
buddies.
And that's... The whole issue is like, I'm going to call it a bromance. It's
not
a bromance.
Not many books start with a bro hug.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. And it takes place in the quantum universe, which is kind of like the alternate world, you know, subatomic universe where Atom sometimes chills.
Yep.
And they, it's like all kinds of cool stuff in his laboratory. There's actually some stuff that I would call kind of exposition-y stuff, but I was like loving all of it.
Yeah.
Like having the two of them talk about
Ray's sort of analysis of what is actually happening with Carter's, again, of past lives and
it
stuff.
Was approachable and kind of cool. He actually busts out like a blackboard and like starts writing with chalk, kind of like figuring how the timeline
scientifically
works.
Scientifically was cool.
They break down their sort of their time travel multiverse theory, and I'm like, oh, that's a cool way to do this.
Yeah, yep. It is.
You know
and,
what else?
And then it culminates in a badass action sequence. Yep. They've always had good action in this issue. Brian Hitch is doing a good job.
Yeah,
and this has to get them going to the most dangerous planet in the subatomic universe to on the next leg of the mission.
You know what I like about this too is that the Atom is a great character who very few people can get right.
Yeah,
and I feel like if this was their take on the Atom, I would read this book.
Yeah. He's, like, super competent and, like, cool, and his powers, he uses it in a cool way before the issues end.
Yeah.
But it's more about who he is as a person. Like, I like the dude.
I think the last time I liked this character this much was when Warren Ellis wrote him in Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nick,
my backup pick is Venom number 7, which, Donny Cates left us off in kind of a weird place at the end of number 6, with basically the death of Venom, or actually the death of Symbiote, and kind of brings it back up with Eddie Brock in kind of a weird position, going up against Ultimate Reed Richards, which is a bizarre idea.
Ultimate Reed Richards, he was one of the few people who escaped the destruction of the Ultimate
Universe. Yes, because he's evil. He's like the evil Reed Richards, which...
you know what's weird is... Warren Ellis wrote the evil Reed Richards type in
Planetary,
and he also wrote the Fantastic Four in the Ultimate Universe. Which have now crossed over.
Yeah.
He is responsible for all incarnations of evil Reed.
No, Jonathan Hickman made some too.
That's true. But no, and it just is a weird position. I like that Donny Cates is using crazy things like that. But I'm curious to see where he takes Venom, because he's Eddie Brock and the Symbiote are in a kind of a weird spot right now. And I'll be curious to see what he does with it.
What else you got?
I've got a few things. I've got Supergirl number 23, which is basically Kara versus the Green Lantern Corps, which I actually thought was pretty awesome.
That's kind of cool. Which members of the Corps?
John, Kyle are the main ones, but also... Is it Salak or Salonek?
Yep, Salak.
Salak.
They're Spock.
Yeah, Mogo.
I thought he was dead.
No.
Okay.
Mogo, no Kilowog, but a bunch of other core members. But it's kind of Kara still on that kind of investigatorial what happened to Krypton. And it's just a lot of fun. And plus, Krypto's along for the ride. And Amanda Connor draws a fantastic alt cover that has Krypto riding a rocket. And it's pretty badass. Captain America number 4, which sees Steve stealth into a villain's base, going up against things while Celine has Agent 13 held hostage. There's also a notable Captain America villain that shows up. I don't know, this felt like the first Ta-Nehisi Coates finally going in the direction of Captain America that I want. Then I've got Catwoman number 4, which I didn't get a chance to read, and then a What If book. And I didn't get a chance to read this, but this, based on the title alone, it sounded like something I would have loved as a kid. What if Peter Parker became the Punisher? Just as a fun concept. Not unlike the noir version of Spider-Man or something, but
yeah.
It looks like a ton of fun. Dave, what else you got on your pile?
Let's see... some of these I've read, some I haven't, but there's a book called Infinite Dark from Image that's like a sort of sci-fi noir set on I believe it's staged on a ship or like a kind of like a space station that's meant to survive the death of the end of the universe.
Mm.
Like when everything, entropy kind of like collapses it all. And I think it's like they don't know if there will be another Big Bang, but somehow this like falls out, it can go out of sync with the universe or something. But there is a murder mystery set on it, and that sounded pretty cool. there's also, speaking of murder, there's the color edition of it's like the first few issues of Alan Moore's From Hell, which was serialized originally. It wasn't always just a giant graphic novel.
This looks like it's like prestige format.
Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be more, but Eddie Campbell, the artist himself, colors it, and just flipping through it, I was like, oh man, I really do like this. There's so much good stuff that happens in it, and I find like almost every scene in it sort of fascinating.
I believe they call it Volume 1, right? So I would assume that we'll do more.
Yep. I will almost certainly end up picking that up. There's a fantasy comic called The Steel Prince that I'll be reading later on that's based on a novel series from V.E. Schwab. I don't know who she is. I'm told she's a best-selling New York Times best-selling author person.
Sure, she is.
But it's like kind of, I think I've heard sort of a dark swashbuckling kind of thing. Really like the latest issue of The Quantum Age, the Jeff Lemire's spinoff of Black Hammer. This one notably flashes back to the origin, essentially their retelling of what would be the first story with the Legion of Superheroes, since this is their Legion of Superheroes. He clearly his spin on it. And I really liked it. There's that same mixture of innocence and cut to the present darkness that the whole series has been doing. So
I really enjoyed that one, too.
And I have not read it yet, but the second issue of Elric the White Wolf, which I'm looking forward to checking out because it looked like such a good version overall of the, Michael Moorcock's famous dark fantasy. That is it for me.
All right. I read a bunch of Image books this week. Before I talk about that, I'm going to just real quick run through new issues of Amazing Spider-Man number 7. Miss Marvel number 35, both books I'm enjoying. There is a second issue of the Star Wars Adventures Tales from Vader's Castle. This is a Count Dooku Obi-Wan horror book. Count Dooku Prince of Darkness, which is a great little nod because Christopher Lee also played Dracula. And then DC has the Cursed Comics Cavalcade, which is a 80-page giant with a bunch of horror short stories featuring Batman, Swamp Thing, Guy Gardner, Zatanna, some others. And then Image. Image has a bunch of weird books this week. So, Murder Falcon number 1 is a new book by Daniel Warren Johnson, who is a fantastic artist who did Extremity. This is he's creating, drawing, writing, and lettering a book about the power of metal. Not Dark Knight's metal, but actual
heavy
shredding
metal.
Guitar metal. Yeah. The lead character is this kind of pudgy, I want to say Jack Black-esque dude. Jack Black had long blonde hair. Who emerges from his van when supernatural creatures are around, plays a shredding guitar solo, and summons the Murder Falcon, a humanoid falcon, shirtless with a bandana and a big cybernetic arm. You probably already know whether or not you're into this book by this description, but
we could probably say if you like shirtless bear fighter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This actually is a little more serious than I expected. Uh-huh. It's got some decent, there's some
he's a nuanced Murder Falcon.
Yes. The lead character has some tragedy in his past, and he's not sure he wants to be a hero. But super fun, definitely worth a look. The latest issues of Farmhand, Crowded, The Weatherman, and Outpost Zero, all of which I like, all of which are interesting sort of sci-fi books. And then there's a book I did not read called The Last Space Race from Aftershock.
Oh, I meant to read that.
Did not get a chance to because it was too big of a week.
I believe that's about, like, sort of almost like rival billionaires doing, like, space exploration stuff right after, like, we get a signal that's clearly something about aliens and, that changes how space is going to be explored from then on.
Yeah.
And it sounded interesting.
That's it for us this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about the new Doctor Who. Talking about comics, movies, and fame. They even talk about board games. No week is the same. All right, we want to take a chance to talk about the new Doctor Who, the 13th Doctor, Jodie Whittaker, who premiered on Monday? Sunday?
Sunday, I believe.
Yeah.
Sunday. I didn't get a chance to watch it until last night.
I watched it late last night, and that's why I'm on 3 hours sleep right now. Yep. Well, that and other things, too.
Yeah.
To read the right-wing xenophobic trolls, you'd think it would have been the end of the universe. Instead, everybody liked it.
It was, in fact, the highest-rated Doctor Who.
I was going to say, yeah.
I can't believe racists were wrong, and misogynists were wrong, but they were.
It seems crazy. I really like this. And I don't know, my Doctor Who is like, I'm a started with the Ninth Doctor, I never watched the old stuff, I have no real fondness for the old stuff.
I think that's kind of true of all of us. Like, actually, I've seen some of the old stuff, and I do have some fondness for it, though not quite enough to go and watch it all.
But my favorite Doctor was Matt Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And this felt a little more Tennant-y in a lot of ways. She felt very David Tennant, but also there's bits of that sort of whimsy that I like from Matt Smith. I thought she did a great job in the role.
You know what I notice about, like, a good premiere for Doctor Who, and I've seen a number of them over the years, even though I have not, it's actually been a year or a couple years since I've followed any Doctor Who, just kind of got my fill. But when they're on, like, their scripting and stuff is great. Like, so when she first shows up, I mean, yes, you kind of understand the Doctor is going to have some quippy, clever dialogue.
Yeah.
It was really good. I was like, out of the gate, I was like, oh, that's pretty good. Because I was kind of like ready to like, all right, it's going to be fun, but I'm like, it's not going to win me over. I mean, I've seen this shtick before.
Yeah.
And then it still won me over.
I mean, part of the reason is always the companions are always important. They did a great job with their companions here.
You know what I loved? So this the first scene where they meet her, there's this weird stuff that happens on its train at nighttime.
Yeah.
Something like impacts it and has killed someone. And there's a few kind of like normal people who will end up becoming the multiple companions.
Yep.
And she shows up too in a very weird way, the doctor.
Yep.
And she's not sure who she is. She's clearly dressed, it's the weird regeneration
thing. She's dressed in the Capaldi clothes, which I love.
Yeah, kind of a tattered versions of them.
That's the thing they've been doing in every regeneration. I love that.
And at one point, this is kind of, I think, where I was sort of on board with the dialogue. Somebody's calling her Miss or Ma'am or something like that, and she turns around and she's like, "Why do you keep calling me Ma'am or whatever?" And they're like, "Well, you're a woman." And she just would, like, without missing a beat, she's like, "Oh, okay." And she's like, "Does this suit me?" You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, it was so doctor.
Yeah.
And funny, and it also just immediately moved past the gender difference.
Yes. Yeah. I liked the way they dealt with that too. Yeah.
Nick, did you?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I hadn't been watching Doctor Who for... I think I didn't even finish Matt Smith's run.
Same here. So I think you and I are in the same place.
I mean, it's not that I didn't like it. I think I just...
Other things came up.
And yeah. Honestly,
it wasn't super compelling.
Honestly, I felt like Stephen Moffat was probably the... It was Moffat, right?
Moffat was all the way up through the quality.
Yeah, and I think I was just kind of like done with his... cycle of the same story, it felt like.
Yeah.
And... while this one doesn't feel too giantly different from some of the Doctor's stories we've seen before, there's something fresh about it. It was just... Oh,
one interesting thing that they did on that level, which is to kind of remove, at least initially, all of the standard trappings.
Yeah, shouldn't have a screwdriver.
No sonic screwdriver, no TARDIS. Those are the big ones, and it's still just figuring out how things are going.
And also new villains.
Yeah.
The sort of alien threat in this one was not only creepy... because of sort of an affectation it has.
Yep. I'm just going to say something to do with human teeth.
Yeah. Yep. But just the general look of it. It has a fantastic kind of...
I felt like he actually could have worked in like a Marvel movie or something that. His suit was
the
cool
suit was
as hell.
Cool, and just the effect of kind of like the cold that it's always
sort of...
his
cold burn thing.
Yeah.
This, also, I lost my train of thought.
But also sort of it's kind of the tenderly spider...
Yeah, there's like this coiling sphere of like Lovecraftian tentacles is another alien.
Great effect.
I guess what I was going to say is there's a central mystery as to what's going on here that a lot of... the structure of a lot of Doctor Who episodes is to kind of take you on a personal journey with some characters you like as they are kind of bounced around in a mystery that the Doctor slowly pieces together with their help. And this was a good, compelling mystery with some characters who had emotional stakes in it. There were some deaths in it. And there were sometimes... this is something they can do pretty good on the show is somebody can die who I only met like 5 minutes before and I care about it.
Yeah, I think that was one of the notable things. The other thing that I think that Doctor Who does well at its best is that the Doctor should be a character. The Doctor shouldn't be like just a side character in general. But the story is about... the Doctor inspiring normal people to heroism.
Yeah.
And that's what they did here.
Yep.
That's why Blink is such a great story, because Doctor Who's barely in it.
Right.
But it is about the effect that the Doctor has on other people. And I like that a lot.
Well, and I like the fact that they're giving him not just one companion.
Yeah.
It's not just Amy, or it's not just Donna.
Yeah, well, essentially, I mean, we've got a young lady cop who's kind of like, I mean, what was she on? Like, effectively meter maid sort of duty.
Yeah. Like a young 20-ish
I forget what they called
guy.
It, but yeah, she's just kind of trying to get out of that. There's somebody I like that they have some tentative connections early on. She grew up with she went to school when she was younger with the other guy who's like, a 20-something guy who's, he's kind of a little bit, he's experiencing some emotional turmoil over like some physical, like he's got a,
he's got like a muscular,
dyspraxia, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's like where you, it's almost like dyslexia, with the world, and sort of motor coordination.
Yeah.
And then you've got an older interracial couple. that are all involved,
Sorry, I did cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I didn't. I don't think I had quite a point other than to just kind of to reel off that they're an interesting cast of characters who I got to liking all of them immediately. I will be curious to see how they use them all.
Yeah. I really liked her building her own sonic screwdriver, and I love that she calls it a sonic Swiss Army knife. Yep.
Yeah, that was a cool way to change it up. She's got it, like, it's kind of cool because it looks clunky.
Yeah.
It's like she had to, like, work with what was, like, in somebody's garage or yeah. their
I was a big fan of the I hate empty pockets. I mean,
yeah.
Always kind of like looking for something because she always supposed to have something, and yeah. it's like I hate empty pockets.
Yeah. Yep.
It's empty pockets.
And so yeah, she has a sort of more slightly more multi-tool kind of thing made, but it's also a little clunkier.
Well, she's all like, I can build this. I think I can build it. Maybe I can.
Yeah. her not knowing who she was at the outset, the not quite cooked regeneration they've done before, but I thought they really did that well.
Yep. Yeah, it was along the same lines.
Well, go ahead.
It was along the same lines as when Tennant first showed up after the Eccleston, where Tennant got to have that kind of final moment where he was just
badass.
Like the utter badass.
Yes. And this, I was also amused by the fact that all of the would-be companions had bombs implanted in them.
Yeah.
Yep.
And were, like, occasionally raising that, like, listen, we like how this is going, and you seem pretty, like, a cool person, but when are these going to go off?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm working on it.
I'll get to it.
And occasionally confessing, like, when they're climbing a crane, they're like, you know...
do you have a plan?
And they're like, what about the time we get to the top?
Yeah, I love that. That was great.
So there's a lot of moments that felt quintessential Doctor and yet also new. She had that kind of an energetic personality that pulled me in when I kind of didn't expect to be honest. Yes.
Well, I believe the person who's showrunning it now and also one of the lead writers is one of the people on Broadchurch, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's correct.
Where she came from, or
where
she starred.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have the obvious relationship. They kind of know, like, what... Mm-hmm. they excel at, but I just love the fact that it's somebody new breathing new life into Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not that Moffat ran into the ground, because I've revisited some of the Capaldi stuff and I think it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I know some people who love Capaldi.
But it... Yeah, I just... This is something new, and I obviously needed more Doctor Who in my life.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yep. Might be a time where we could use a little bit of lightness.
Yes.
I definitely want to see more.
Yeah, me too. All right, we've got a bunch of other stuff, but we're gonna tackle that next week because we're running out of time. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and until next week,
Yo Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.